Now from the KSFR newsroom, at noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Thursday, September 12th. A former Santa Fe builder has been indicted by a state grand jury on multiple felony fraud charges that victims say amount to millions of dollars. William Cal Kalinowski was the force behind Barranca Builders and a number of other local companies. In 2008, he defaulted on bank loans made for multiple high-end home construction projects at Las Campanas, leaving subcontractors and home buyers holding the bag. He filed for bankruptcy in 2009. The 68-year-old Kalinowski, now living in Massachusetts, has been ordered to appear in a Santa Fe district court on October 7th. The year-long $13 million makeover of Atalaya School is the focus of a Santa Fe Public Schools community forum today at Conney Elementary. The 5:30 event will feature a presentation by the Community District Working Group, followed by a question and answer session. 23,000 square feet of additions are being made, including classrooms, restrooms, as well as a new gymnasium. That component has been the focus of some protests from the surrounding neighborhood, as residents say its placement and height will obstruct views. A redesign of the gym will be presented at today's meeting. The entire project is expected to be completed by June of next year. The Chevron Corporation has agreed to pay $5.2 million to settle all claims relating to its alleged improper use of monies from the New Mexico Corrective Action Fund. Attorney General Gary King says that Chevron never informed New Mexico as required that they collected hundreds of millions from their outside insurers while using public funds to clean up petroleum contamination from their leaking underground storage tanks at gasoline stations around the state. New Mexico paid out approximately $4 million directly to Chevron for that cleanup effort over the years. September has been proclaimed Preparedness Month in Santa Fe. Today, the city will conduct a public meeting on its hazard mitigation plan at 5:30 p.m. at the Community Convention Center. The meeting will focus on long-term strategies to reduce disaster losses, both human and material, from any of a broad scenario of emergency situations. A copy of the draft mitigation plan is available online at the city's website. Santa Fe police have publicly identified 55-year-old Mark Ginnell as the man whose body was found Tuesday near Rosario Cemetery. Ginnell is believed to have died as a result of a violent alcohol-fueled altercation with 37-year-old Orlando Yazzie. Yazzie admits to repeatedly kicking Ginnell in the head as he lay on the ground. He's being held at the Santa Fe County Detention Center on a $1 million cash-only bond, charged with an open count of murder. The Los Alamos National Lab says an event this weekend will parallel one that took place 69 years ago involving the lab's first director, Robert Oppenheimer. It has nothing to do with science or technology, but rather theater. In 1944, Oppenheimer appeared as a corpse in the Los Alamos Little Theater's production of Arsenic and Old Lace. The theater is mounting a revival with an as-yet-unnamed LANL official reprising Oppenheimer's role tomorrow and Saturday. Being laid to rest today in Albuquerque is U.S. Forest Service Captain Token Adams, the 41-year-old wildland firefighter whose body was found last Friday, 1 week after reported missing. Adams was part of a crew dispatched to investigate a small fire in the Jemez. His body was found near the crashed ATV he was using in difficult terrain. Funeral services are being conducted at Calvary Church in Albuquerque. Meanwhile, Governor Martinez has ordered flags to be flown at half staff through sundown. And weather for Santa Fe. Another round of heavy rain very likely today as a strong plume of monsoonal moisture sets up over our area. Meteorologist Mark Fettig with the National Weather Service office in Albuquerque says rainfall totals could be significant.
From late morning, say, through mid-afternoon today for the beginning of it, could diminish a little bit later tonight, but then regenerate either in the morning or afternoon hours tomorrow. And it looks like rain totals, again, could even be more in some spots than we saw on Tuesday. We'd be looking at 1 to 2.5, even locally 3 inches or so in some spots. So we're looking definitely a very significant amount of additional rainfall.
An 80% chance for rain today with highs in the low 70s. Precipitation probabilities increase to 90% this evening, and there's a 60% chance for rain again tomorrow. Meanwhile, the current Santa Fe temperature now 60 degrees. This is Dan Garrity for KSFR News. At noon, we'll continue in just a moment.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by the Santa Fe Reporter, providing local news and arts and entertainment information to more than 60,000 readers each week. The Reporter is available every Wednesday at over 300 locations in Santa Fe and the surrounding area, and on the web at sfreporter.com.
And at noon on KSFR, segues now to today's feature stories. Santa Fe Public Schools hosts a community forum this evening at Conney Elementary School to discuss the $13 million reconstruction of the district's Atalaya pre-K through 6 facility. Joining us now to talk about tonight's presentation by the Community District Working Group, which will also feature a question and answer session, is Carl Grenler, Chief Business Officer for the district. Carl, let's begin with an overview of this project.
Sure. The project began with the 2009 general obligation bond. Originally was allocated $5 million for construction changes and upgrades to the facility, and then later was changed with an allocation from the 2013 GO bond for a total of $13.5 million project. So in essence, the main building remains, and the remainder of the facility is being redesigned and rebuilt. And this project has been going on for some time, probably 20-plus meetings with our Board of Education and the Citizens Review Committee and meetings with the school community to set the project with a very tight budget timeline and a program that would advance the school and make it a school of choice in Santa Fe. The interesting thing about this is that we missed a part of the community in involving in the review of the project. And, you know, we focus on program timeline and cost, and also on community sensitivity. It's designed in a territorial style which fits for that part of town, but we missed the fit for the community, and that really came forward, you know, when the project was under construction, the old buildings demolished, and then the new footprint started to come into fruition with the grading, and the community raised its hand loudly and said, "Hey, let's take another look at this. It doesn't seem to fit." And so that's what this has been all about. And just over 2 weeks ago, we held a community forum at the Audubon Center and, you know, heard many of the concerns, objections from the community. And at that point in time, the superintendent, Dr. Joel Boyd, put in place a task force which had all of the stakeholders involved, the school community, the neighborhood, clearly, our construction management team here at the district, the architect and the contractor, come up with a better plan and see if we could evaluate changes in the footprint of the facility that would meet all of the objectives, including a fit for the community.
And a major point of contention has emerged around the design for Atalaya's new gymnasium, with concerns about its height and placement, possibly obscuring views of nearby neighbors. But as we understand, the plans, even with preliminary work already underway, do allow for reconfiguring to address those concerns, yes?
Yes, that's correct. And that's what our effort has been the last couple of weeks with everyone at the table, the representatives from the neighborhood, which have a lot of expertise, architectural, contractor building expertise, that have certainly been a good voice, you know, for the community and concerns, and assisted us in evaluating opportunities to modify the facility. And that's what's going to be shared out tonight. Renderings from all perspectives, elevations from all perspectives of the new design. Also, there'll be a 3D rendering. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm looking forward to of a person walking around the facility and then being able to, in a 3D visualization way, be able to see the design from various aspects of the property. It'll show the gym in a different location. It'll show slightly less square footage in the facility, and all of that combined gives it a much better aesthetic fit, we all feel, for the site. And due to an awful lot of work by a lot of folks, brings it in at the cost, at the budget that the Board of Education has approved, and with only a slight delay, which will still enable us to finish the project before the start of school next year, and the gym will be delayed just a couple months.
In the meantime, Atalaya's students and faculty are conducting the current school year elsewhere. What is the current enrollment, and where are they?
The number of students enrolled right now in the Atalaya School, which is being housed right now at Connie Elementary, is around 200. It's fluxed up to over 260 in the last several years, and the design for this school is 325 to 350. It's the feeling of the board and the parent community, certainly, that the school can grow in a school of choice type facility, and certainly the school's results are improving, and that will attract students from other parts of town.
Some community members had expressed concern that with Atalaya's newly expanded capacity, the school might eventually add on middle schoolers. Is that in the works?
Well, there's no plan for that now. It's hard to know, you know, in the future what the community might desire, you know, the school community, the parent community, but there's no plans for that at the current time, and there's no design into the building for that.
And apart from the concerns we've just covered, how would you characterize the overall sentiment toward the project?
Well, there's lots of questions. In a void of information, certainly there are lots of questions that we've addressed and continue to address, primarily on the neighborhood side, landscaping, site drainage, access, a number of those types of things, lighting, noise, night and weekend use, putting the power underground. A lot of those types of things are designed into the plan, and we're listening to the neighborhood to see if there's other opportunities to make it even better.
And your final thoughts on this today?
I think I'd just like to share that this has been an interesting opportunity for all the communities involved in the Atalaya School to come together. The neighborhood, the parent community, the district, I've had an opportunity to get to know each other a lot better over the last couple of weeks in this process, and we're coming out with a better designed school, which is going to meet the needs not only of the parent community and the students, but of the neighborhood, which is what our intention is as a school district.
Carl Grenler, Chief Business Officer for Santa Fe Public Schools, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
Lenzik is proud to present Maria de Barros, singing the music of the Cape Verde Islands, on Thursday, September 12th. De Barros carries on the tradition of her godmother, Cesaria Ibora, bringing Cape Verde's mix of African, Brazilian, and Portuguese music to audiences around the world. For tickets to Maria de Barros on September 12th, call 988-1234 or visit ticketsantafe.org. The Lenzik is a nonprofit, member-supported organization.
17 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. September has been named Preparedness Month in Santa Fe. Tonight, the city conducts a public meeting on its hazard mitigation plan at the Community Convention Center, starting at 5:30. Joining us now to talk about the event is the city's emergency manager, Andrew Phelps. Andrew, let's talk about the reasons for this meeting.
Absolutely. We've been developing the city's all-hazard mitigation plan for about the last year now. It's been a pretty labor-intensive process involving representatives really from a myriad of different city agencies, fire department, police department, public works, public utilities, land use, and even agencies from outside city government. We've had folks with our volunteer organizations participate. The Santa Fe Public Schools has been involved in the process, and even amateur radio, to a degree, has been able to lend some insight and input into the development of this plan. And basically, the plan, the term plan is kind of a misnomer. It's really more of a strategy to lessen the impacts of the hazards and the risks that we face in Santa Fe, to lessen their impacts on our community.
Describe for us some of the scenarios for which you seek to accomplish necessary advanced planning.
Something that's on folks' mind today and yesterday and probably tomorrow is flooding. We've had a significant amount of rain in the city of Santa Fe over the last couple of days, so to try to lessen the impact that rain and floods have on the city of Santa Fe, doing things like widening culverts underneath roads, improving drainage, things like that. It's not going to eliminate rain or eliminate flooding necessarily, but it's going to allow us to better manage where that flood water goes so it doesn't impact the community. Another terrific example is wildland thinning projects, where we go into sort of the wildland-urban interface up in the National Forest and the boundary areas over there, and we try to reduce the number of dry fuels, fallen trees, brush that's on the ground, things like that, so that if we do have a wildfire, it doesn't have quite the same fuel load and it's not going to burn as quickly and as intensely, and it's much easier for our firefighters to manage that fire and prevent it from causing major damage to the homes in Santa Fe.
And there are a number of agencies involved in crafting a response plan of action. Are you also canvassing public input?
We sure are, and that's a critical part of every planning process that we do from an emergency management standpoint here in Santa Fe. The more eyes that we can have on the different hazards that we have in Santa Fe and strategies and recommendations to mitigate those hazards, the more robust and efficient and effective that plan is going to be. So we're certainly inviting the public over the next 30 days between now and October 9th to review the plan. The plan is available for download online at santafenm.gov. Look at the plan, fill out a comment form. There's a place where you can make comments. We ask folks to identify the page and line number, so it's a little bit easier for us to find what section they're making a recommendation to change for. But to take a look at the plan and let us know what they think. And if they have some unique ideas to mitigate some of these hazards, we're certainly open to listening for those ideas and trying to include them in our plan.
And what is the process beyond this period of taking input?
The process from this point involves a whole bunch of different levels of government, actually. Once we have the plan finalized and incorporated public comment and feedback into the plan, that plan then will go through a final editing process. At that point, it goes up to the State Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. They'll conduct an initial review of that plan before sending it to FEMA, the Region 6 office in Denton, Texas. At that point, FEMA will review the plan, make sure it meets all of their requirements, and once they sign off on the plan, we'll bring the plan back to the city of Santa Fe, and the governing body will be able to choose at that time to adopt the plan. And this plan, aside from giving us a comprehensive strategy to deal with the hazard that we have in Santa Fe, it also frees the city up to qualify for some federal hazard mitigation funding to fund some of those projects that I mentioned, like improving storm flow runoff and how that water can maybe go underneath roads and improving drainage and improving our wildland-urban interface, doing public education and outreach about some of the hazards that we have in Santa Fe. So it allows us to qualify for a lot more federal funding to mitigate the effects of those hazards, both through construction-type projects and also through public awareness and outreach.
City Emergency Manager Andrew Phelps, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR.
Globalkerque, New Mexico's 9th annual celebration of world music and culture, returns to Albuquerque's National Hispanic Cultural Center September 20th and 21st. Catch Leon Russell, Pancho Sanchez, Sierra Leone's Refugee All-Stars, Solas, and other artists from around the world performing on 3 stages over 2 nights. Tickets at the NHCC box office. More info at globalkerque.org. A message from the tax-exempt AMP Concerts.
22 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. We learned this week that enrollment at all New Mexico State University campuses continues to decline, a trend in evidence for several years now. Joining us now to talk about the matter is Dr. Bernadette Montoyer, NMSU's Vice President of Student Affairs and Enrollment. Dr. Montoyer, what do you make of this decline?
There's a couple of things that I think need to be sort of taken into context. In fall of 2009, we hit our highest enrollment in first-time freshmen at New Mexico State University. So as with all things, enrollment fluctuates. We were up in 2009. We've seen a little bit of a decrease each year since then. This year, we are seeing a decrease across New Mexico State University system at about 5%. The Las Cruces campus, which is our research university, we're down in headcount at 5% as well. We're seeing our largest drop, actually, in our graduate enrollment. The total drop there is about a 5.7%. Now, so one of the things that we have to keep in mind is in the state of New Mexico, the number of high school graduates who would be entering as first-time freshmen has been declining over the last few years, and based on witchy statistics that we can see and what we're getting from PED, that sort of hits its lowest point this year. But in the coming years, we expect to see an increase again. So hopefully New Mexico State University, as well as the other institutions in our state, will begin to see some enrollment increases at the freshman level once again.
Is some of the drop-off due to natural variability in the student population of our state, or is something else at play?
Yeah, I think there are two things that we need to consider there. One, I think, just has to do with our population and the statistics and the fact that we are seeing fewer high school students graduating. We still see here at New Mexico State a very traditional college population. So those students right out of high school, that is really our mainstay here at this university. We're a residential campus, so the number of high school students declining in the state of New Mexico, or rather the number of high school graduates declining, is going to have an effect on us. The other piece of this, and we found this in our recruitment around the state of New Mexico this year, and due to the fact that we have so many institutions within the state, which is really actually a wonderful thing for the citizens of New Mexico, in that they have choice on where they choose to go to college. A lot of our two-year institutions, as well as our four-year institutions, are scattered throughout the state, so people have choice. And one thing we're finding is that a lot of students are choosing to stay closer to home. And much of that is due to their financial ability to pay for college. We have many fine students who applied to New Mexico State University, who were admitted and welcomed, and in the end, the families made the decision that they needed to stay and live at home and go to their local community college or to a regional institution. We understand that. Being able to pay for college is a challenge that many of our families have.
You've speculated that the trend toward decline may be at its bottom now, but there's another almost immediate concern for college-bound New Mexico students as we hear the state's lottery scholarship fund is soon to go bust. That must factor into your future enrollment projections, yes?
Absolutely, yes. In fact, I am serving on a statewide committee. This committee was formed as a result of Senate Memorial 101 that was passed last year during the legislative session. And I'm very proud to be a part of that committee. We are looking at addressing solvency for the state of New Mexico so that our students do have the opportunity to attend college and have that tuition paid for. It is a huge worry for me, as well as for my colleagues across the state. And that will impede families' ability to send their students off to college because we've made a promise to these students. Students now who are in elementary school or middle school, they've been sort of told by their families and by their teachers, you can go to college and you can get the lottery scholarship to pay for your tuition. And that's changing. And I do anticipate a change unless our lawmakers can come up with a strategy to find other funding, or unless the citizens of the state of New Mexico continue to invest more strongly into the lottery itself and to spend a little of their discretionary cash on some scratchers or on some lottery tickets. That's the issue, is the revenues within the lottery gaming have just dropped. And we've been in touch with the Lottery Commission. We've seen those figures. And folks are choosing to spend their discretionary dollars in some other manner.
You also cite a drop-off in the number of high school seniors that concurrently attend college under dual credit programs.
Okay, a couple of things on that. We are seeing some slight decreases in dual credit students, for instance. And the ends are small. Let me give you an example. At New Mexico State University last year at this time, we had 138 dual credit students. This year, we have 125. So the numbers are small in terms of the drop. Now, our Grants campus, located there just about an hour west of the city of Albuquerque, they actually saw an increase of 35% in the number of dual credit students enrolled at their campus from this time last year. So, you know, there's some unique fluctuations really within dual credit. Now, the high schools are still really encouraging students to get the dual credit, but they also have options now with many of our institutions offering online dual credits. So a student, let's say, who lives in Magdalena, New Mexico, small community, they can take online credit maybe from Eastern or New Mexico Tech or New Mexico State University. So students, again, are taking advantage of the choice they have on where they wish to take dual credit classes. While we would love to have them all at New Mexico State, we know that that's not the fact. But those students that we do have, I think we continue to serve them quite well and hope that we can eventually recruit them upon their high school graduation to New Mexico State University.
Dr. Bernadette Montoya, NMSU's Vice President of Student Affairs and Enrollment, many thanks for joining us here at Noon on KSFR, which we'll continue with more in just a moment.
KSFR is supported by the City of Santa Fe and is proud to air the full live Santa Fe City Council meetings beginning at 5 p.m. on the second and last Wednesday of every month from the City Council Chambers at 200 Lincoln Avenue. Agendas and packets for City Council meetings are available on the Friday prior to each City Council meeting on their website, santafenm.gov. To get on the City Council agenda, contact the City Clerk at 955-6521.
Not too far from Santa Fe is a significant site which has played a role in the history of both the state and the country. Here is KSFR News reporter Charles Maynard with the story.
A New Mexico historic site, rich in history, is located about 90 miles north of Santa Fe on I-25. Fort Union has played a major role in some of the state's history. Charles Strickfaden is the park manager for the Fort Union National Monument.
Well, we are just an easy hour and a half drive up Interstate 25 from Santa Fe. So we're just the other side of Las Vegas, New Mexico, and right along the, about 15 minutes off of the interstate, exit 366, but an easy, beautiful hour and a half drive on Interstate 25 towards Denver, but just past Las Vegas. And there's big brown signs, a turnoff that says Fort Union National Monument. So we're like a lot of New Mexico's national parks, and we commemorate an adobe fort that was here, which is the first U.S. presence in what was the New Mexico Territory from the 1850s until 1892, when the railroad made the cavalry obsolete and Santa Fe Trail was not as critical when the railroad came along.
The fort even played a role in the Civil War.
This became part of the United States after the Mexican-American War. The soldiers of Fort Union worried about the Confederate advance from Texas, and actually they did come up. They took several towns in New Mexico, including Santa Fe. And in 1862, there was a battle at what is Gloria Pass, which you just travel through along Interstate 25, and most folks are not even aware of it. And Union soldiers actually lost that battle to the Confederates. However, the Confederate soldiers left their wagon train lightly guarded. And so they won the battle, but when they returned to their wagon train, they found it destroyed. And so without those supplies, they were not able to go on to Colorado, go on to California, and pursue their dreams of taking the West and the forts of the West.
A number of structures are still standing.
Well, when the military left in 1892, they basically left it, and the community reused a lot of the materials. What we have preserved is about 60 structures, the remains of most of the structures. So they're going to see walls, doors, windows, and our ruins preservation crew every year protects and coats those structures to preserve them as they are. You'll be able to imagine a huge fort of almost 100 different structures, stone walkways of the heyday of Fort Union in the 1870s and 1880s, when Fort Union supplied over 40 other different forts throughout the Southwest.
This month, people can get an unprecedented look at Fort Union.
And when we do our program on September 21st, we give a sort of behind-the-scenes tour of an area that is normally closed to the public, and that was the arsenal. And that's an area that's within the Fort Union Ranch, and we give special tours that Saturday, September 21st, by park rangers to bring those stories alive and imagine what it was like, this hustle and bustle of wagon trains and thousands of soldiers and civilians and local New Mexico volunteers here in this valley that Fort Union occupies. The evening of Thursday, September 19th, the third Thursday of every month, we do a special presentation at the Santa Fe Interpretive Center in downtown Las Vegas. And we may do a living history program, we may do a lecture, and we are going to have Mr. Chester Nez, which is one of the original Navajo code talkers. And he is going to be talking about his experience as a Navajo and as a U.S. Marine during World War II, when the U.S. military used Navajo code talk to sort of stymie the Japanese efforts to figure out our codes. Downtown Las Vegas, Thursday night, September 19th at 7 p.m., and they can call the Fort Union Visitor Center at 425-8025 or on our website to get information. And that's also a great way to learn about the stories of New Mexico and the way the local citizens, you know, had a lot to do with events of the past 150 years.
Charles Strickfaden with the Fort Union National Monument. For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
12:35 here in the KSFR Newsroom, and that indeed is a very good time to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
It's like a personal trainer for your brain. That's the tagline for the website Lumosity.com. The TV ad says Lumosity.com uses something like neural elasticity, whatever that means. Having never visited the website, I don't really know what it's like. But again, according to the ad, the exercises for your brain seem like games. I do worry about keeping my mind active and functioning as best as I can. Since I am from another planet, though, it's difficult for me to gauge how well I'm doing compared to Earthlings. I do have a couple of things I do to stay mentally active. For example, I count the spokes on wheels. Don't ask me why. And when I see numbers like on license plates, billboards, anywhere, I'll add them up or multiply them. Finally, I stick my head in a pencil sharpener once a day to, of course, keep my mind sharp. For KSFR, I'm the dullest pencil in the bunch, Christopher Hagen. Bye.
And with that, we'll conclude this edition of At Noon, KSFR's Extended Noon News Hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with many thanks to my contributing colleague today, Charles Maynard. And we'll be back with more news of and for New Mexico for you tomorrow. And as always, we hope you join us.